You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Batman number 55, Batman Dam number 1, Nightwing number 49, Green Lanterns number 55, Justice League number 8, Mr. Miracle number 11, and for our main topic we'll be talking Batman Gotham by Gaslight, the animated movie. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. Alright, Cletus, first up for DC news. The Titans show is supposed to premiere October 12th on DC Universe, of course, with new episodes weekly.
I'm excited. That's coming up pretty soon. It's about 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Nice. Yes. Yeah, I'm excited to check it out. I don't know what my expectations are for it based on that surprising trailer that we got from Comic-Con, but I mean, I'm for sure going to be checking it out.
I'll be checking it out too. I'm not going to make any judgments until I watch at least a few episodes of it. All right, next up for DC News, Warner Brothers has set a date for its upcoming Birds of Prey film, February 7th, 2020. Film's supposed to have Margot Robbie reprising her role as Harley Quinn. And I had some conflicting reports on other cast members. I heard a rumor that Orphan was supposed to be in it. Then I also heard that Huntress was supposed to be in it and Black Canary.
I believe they've officially cast Black Canary and Huntress.
Okay.
And I thought I saw a news report for those two.
And I also saw that Renee Montoya was supposed to be in it.
That would make sense.
So, and I don't know if she's going to be the Question or if she's going to be just a detective. I don't know.
It would be really cool if she was the Question. I would kind of be surprised if they went that route, to be honest with you. But I would like it. I would like them to go ahead and pull the trigger on that one.
It'd be interesting, that's for sure.
I mean, because what are the chances the original Question gets in one of these movies? I would imagine quite slim, so why not make her the Question?
And they've also announced that Black Mask is supposed to be the villain of the film.
It seems like some of these DC projects are actually, you know, getting made. Now, we were in that weird period for a while where they were just like announcing a bunch of stuff, but nothing was actually happening. So, I mean, I can't really say one way or the other because we're just in the casting phase. But I mean, Margot Robbie was very good as Harley Quinn. And I'm excited to see what she does when she has more creative say over what's going on.
Yeah, because I believe she's one of the producers of this movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think this. I think the fact I'm excited, not necessarily her specifically, but just the fact that this is a female-led movie and it's from the top down. That it's, you know, it's similar to Wonder Woman, that it had a female director, female lead, obviously. And this seems like the same thing. I don't know. I think you can, in my opinion, it changes the perspective of a movie and the things that they focus on. And for a movie like Birds of Prey, I think that's a positive thing. So I'm kind of curious to see and eager to see what they come up with.
I agree with you. And I've been a Birds of Prey fan since the comic first came out in the late 80s, early 90s. So I'm excited to see what they're going to do with it. All right, next up for DC News, lost actor Jeremy Davies, who played Daniel Faraday on the show Lost, has been cast in the role of Dr. John Deegan in the upcoming CW Arrowverse crossover. Now, Dr. Deegan is described as a doctor who is at Arkham Asylum. This is the quote they had in the article I read. But he might be crazier than the inmates he treats. He will bring Green Arrow, The Flash, and Supergirl to Gotham City.
And I know there's strong speculation on the villain that he's playing. We'll maybe save that for people who want to be surprised, but I'm really excited to see what they do with this character, if that's true. And even if it's not, I'm curious to see what they're going to do. The crossover is always like one of my favorite times of the year for the CW shows. So like they could honestly be announcing almost anything, and I'd still be pretty excited.
All right. They've also named the crossover for this year Elseworlds. Not sure what I think about that name for the crossover, and I'm not sure what it implies either. I'm hoping it doesn't mean that this isn't really part of the Arrowverse.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that that's the worst thing. I almost wonder if that might. I suspect it will be. I would be surprised if it's not. But even if it wasn't, I don't know that that's the worst thing, because then it's not weighted down by the need to progress their shows, right?
Yeah, that is true. I would be hoping that this story would be totally separate from what's going on in their shows.
Yeah, so I don't know. I feel like it's. I don't. I would be a little surprised if, like, the Oliver in this show isn't the Oliver that we have from Arrow. But if it's not, I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, it would be a little disappointing, but it wouldn't. I also think it probably on some level would make for a better story, because they would be able to focus entirely on that story without any of the baggage from their shows.
That is true. And they've also announced the monitor is supposed to be part of this event.
And this, I think, the Elseworlds thing, obviously the connotation with that is these alternate worlds, again, free from continuity. The monitor to me suggests we're definitely getting, of course, we're getting a multiverse story with Supergirl coming in the first place. But it almost makes me wonder, the monitor makes me wonder if we really are going to a different world. And we're almost like we're seeing it from the monitor's perspective, maybe. Or maybe the monitor is bringing them to different worlds. I don't know.
I don't know either. It sounds interesting, though.
Yeah, I definitely think we're in store for some multiverse travel beyond just the normal transition between the normal Arrowverse universe and then the Supergirl universe. I feel like there's going to be more at play than just those two.
Right. And we may see characters we're used to seeing in the shows as different people, too. We might be seeing different versions of, like, Cisco or Felicity or something like that from other worlds.
Well, what's interesting, I think, if they, and we don't know what they're planning to do, but if, for example, they do a full, like, different universe that these heroes are in, they would allow potentially for these actors to portray the heroes differently. Like, maybe we could actually have a more lighthearted Green Arrow. I know it might be a little weird because Stephen Amell would still be playing him, but I mean, the dude has comedic chops, like, he can do it. So I think it would be almost interesting to see them get to play a character a different way.
Yeah, I agree with you there. It would be interesting.
But who knows? Who knows what we're going to get?
Crossover this year is a little later than we're used to. It's going to be December 9th, 10th, and 11th. So it's going to be a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And I'm very excited about it.
I can't wait for the first trailer, because I feel like that's when we're going to finally really start to get some media information on what's in store for that crossover.
Yep. We're only about 2 weeks away from the Arrowverse show starting, so very excited. All right, up next for DC News, they announced the release date of Constantine City of Demons movie, which is October 9th, so excited about that.
Justice League Dark, I know, wasn't entirely a Constantine movie, but I mean, he was one of the major players in that, and it was really good. So I'm pretty excited to check this one out too.
I am too. And I didn't see whether if it was where it was releasing at. I don't know if it's supposed to be on DC Universe or coming out on DVD. Not sure.
That's a good question. I don't know. I almost
So,
wonder if it would be DC Universe.
that'd be a good place to put it.
But I don't know. I feel like, because that's not, I don't know, is that going to make the money that way?
Well, you know what? It may come out on DVD for a while first. Who knows? I guess we'll just have to keep our eyes peeled. It's only about 2 weeks away, though. All right, and for our final bit of DC news, Batman: Curse of the White Knight is coming with the Black Label in 2019. So I'm excited about this sequel.
Yeah, we were something we were both definitely really hopeful for at the end of White Knight. I thought that book ended very well. I thought it was a satisfying ending, but there was definitely some sort of mini cliffhangers there that made you want a second book. Which the way I thought was an ideal ending, where it was a satisfying ending, but there was still more that could be explored. And now that we're getting that, I'm super excited to see the story that we get. And again, they're not rushing it out. You know, they're going to let him once again work through it slowly, get it done the right way. And I'm sure we'll be in store for another really good book.
I'm excited about it. They already announced it's supposed to be exploring Bruce Wayne's history or the history of his family. That was interesting when we reviewed it, so I'm excited to find out more about it. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Okay, let's talk about the Flopcast.
Where every week we drink a lot of coffee and we talk about comic books,
movies,
conventions,
music,
Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, don't forget the coffee.
Lots of weird, obscure pop culture stuff from the 70s and 80s.
And chickens. Yeah, chickens.
This will be the stupidest half hour of your week.
We guarantee it.
You can find us on the ESO Network.
And Flopcast.net.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers!
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 We've got spoilers!
Spoilers!
For you! We got spoilers!
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 Spoilers.
We've got spoilers,
spoilers
for you, for you.
All right, let's talk Batman number 55. All right, Cletus, I gave this the old thumbs up.
I agree. It was really good storytelling once again. I mean, it was just, I think it was a classic King comic book where there's not a lot of writing, but there's just the right amount that kind of just sets up the story. A lot of kind of that sort of subtle repetition and monotony that kind of lulls you into the story. And then a very, what an ending.
Yeah. What I liked about this issue was that Tom King did a good job of the contrast of Batman and Nightwing and all of Nightwing's joking during it.
Yeah.
So I love how he pairs the two. And then, just like you said, that ending where we have KG Beast just waiting on a rooftop for when Batman and Nightwing answer the bat signal. And he just shoots Nightwing in the head. First thing I thought of was Bane hired him. That's the first thought that went through my head.
I am inclined to agree with that.
So they didn't say it, but that's what I'm expecting. And I'm very curious to find out what Bane is up to.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the next issue for this. This was definitely a great beginning to another storyline.
Yep, I agree. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Batman Damn Number 1. I gave this the old thumbs up. I thought the painted artwork was amazing.
I don't know. I felt very conflicted on this. This was kind of a neutral one for me. And I hate to not commit to either one, but some of the stuff was really good. I thought the design of Dead Man was really cool and really interesting. I agree with you on the artwork, except for, you know, the big controversy that kind of took over comic book news for a week. It was just unnecessary. Like, I don't even know why it was in there in the first place. It just felt like one of those things that they put in there because it's like this mature line. Let's put something mature in it. I don't know. And then there was also some of the writing. It felt a little priest-like in that it was a little confusing for the sake of being confusing. I don't know. There was things I liked and things I did not like. I felt very, very conflicted when I ended this issue.
So because I have it digitally, I have the version that didn't have any controversy in it. So, you know, if they would have announced anything, I would have known nothing. So, but I felt that the elements in this were dark and greedy, and I liked the supernatural elements. It felt it grounded in a real world type of story. I love the addition of John Constantine and Zatanna. That felt right for the story. And I'm intrigued with the mystery of who killed the Joker.
or if he's even really dead.
So, I mean, that's an indication too. The other thing I thought was interesting is something we really haven't seen before is Thomas and Martha Wayne fighting, and maybe even Thomas Wayne cheating. It was definitely a different take on the couple.
Yeah, I mean, which is definitely something Brian Azzarello is known for. He definitely has no qualms with messing around with people's expectations. So I am very intrigued by this story, but I'm in kind of a wait and see. Because like I said, there was things I liked, and then there was some things I really didn't like.
Well, the book 2 is supposed to be in stores November 31st, so it's going to skip a month and it'll be back. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Nightwing number 49. I gave this the old thumbs up, only because the Silencer has the same powers as Pulsar in the Chameleon Chronicles, the ability to manipulate sound and silence people. The joke about silencing Damian made the comic for me. No, all joking aside, I actually gave this the thumbs down. Yes, it had some jokes in it, but overall, I didn't really care about this story. And it seemed like an unnecessary distraction to the real story, which we read back in Nightwing Annual. So I just want to get back to the original story. I actually gave this the thumbs down.
I have to agree with you. I mean, I just, where's this story going? Unless you're like hardcore following Nightwing, I feel like it'd be really easy to be like, forget what the story was even about by the time they get back to it.
Yeah, I've been reading Nightwing regularly, so I know what the story is about, but this was a distraction from what it needed to be. And honestly, I don't think it served any purpose, really.
As I was reading this, I was trying to imagine reading whatever the trade that this gets collected into, and I don't know how you would read it and go, well, where did this story go?
So I don't know why they did that story, honestly. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Green Lanterns number 55. You're going to be surprised by this, but I gave it the old thumbs down.
Wow. Well, we agree. I was not expecting to agree on this one, though.
And the reason why I gave it the thumbs down was I honestly didn't think nothing really happened in this issue. There was no character development. We didn't really have that great of interaction between our regular cast or the villains for that fact. Basically, the only thing that happened was the Ravagers attacked Mogo, and we didn't even see that much of that battle. And then Hank Henshaw attacks the Guardians and kind of takes control of the Green Lantern's ring. Of course, except for Hal Jordan, who hasn't recharged. They made sure we knew he hadn't recharged his power ring yet.
Yeah, I mean, I gave it a thumbs down basically for the exact same reason I did the last time that we reviewed 54, which is the writing. It's bad. I know that's subjective, but for me, it's bad. It is subjectively bad. It is outdated writing that does not fit a 2018 comic, especially in the way that you have like old school monologuing, explaining what they're doing. You had dialogue between the Green Lanterns and the Guardians that didn't make sense as discussion, but made sense if you're monologuing what the reader needs to know if they haven't been reading the title. It was just outdated. Bad writing. And for me, that was enough that I did not enjoy it. There was other things, like I agree, the unbelievable coincidence of Hal Jordan, of all people, being the one ring that's not affected was like, okay. I mean, I get it, but come on. come up with something a little more believable. I don't know. I thought it was bad. I thought it was a bad comic.
So, I mean, I'm still going to be reading it till we get to the end of it, but for this issue, I give it the thumbs down. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League number 8. Gave it the old thumbs up. We learn about both Black Manta and Cheetah's reasons for joining the Legion of Doom. I was kind of curious what Lex had to offer them. And as you know, Black Manta wanting to kill all of the Atlanteans, kind of far-fetched, I thought. I could understand him wanting to take control of them and maybe kill some of them, but to kill every last one of them? Okay, whatever. And Cheetah, I thought her wanting to take down one of Wonder Woman's, one of her Patreons, that fit Cheetah, I thought.
Yeah, and I thought that we finally, I've been waiting to see what their power, like, we know what they want from Lex, but I've been waiting to see what Lex needed from them. And it felt like we were starting to, at least we got a glimpse of what that was with Cheetah, with how her claws now have the ability to kill a god. That was really interesting to me. And just the overall kind of continuing the mystery of what's going on. The interaction between Lex and the Batman who laughs was really good. So it would mean it was a thumbs up for me, in case that wasn't clear. But I really enjoyed this comic too.
Yeah. The Batman who laughs, one of the things he revealed was that the Source Wall had been built as a prison for someone. Someone named Perpetua. And he said if you unlock the seven powers that she once yielded, apparently she had them all seven of them, you unlock her. So she's trapped away too. So we see where the story, he kind of hints where the story's headed. And then, of course, we briefly got to see a version of Starman. So we're going to be seeing that unfold in the future.
I was surprised when we got the beginning, we got that stuff with Starman. I thought we were going to get more with that. Not that it was not that I didn't like what we got, but it surprised me when it moved away from Starman for the remainder of the issue.
Yeah, because it ended up feeling more like a teaser than anything else.
In my head, I knew that the guy that Cheetah and Manta were hunting down wasn't Starman, but in my head, it was like, oh, that must be Starman, just because it made sense story-wise for him to come back. And then when they're like, oh, it's Poseidon, I didn't catch it at first just because I was like, oh, that has to be Starman.
All right, let's move on to our last title for this week. Mr. Miracle number 11. Had to give this the thumbs down. Psych! Thumbs up! Man, Mr. Miracle is freaking awesome. And I love Scott and Bart's plan in this. Darkseid defeated.
What a good comic. Oh my gosh. And then the veggie tray.
The veggie tray was freaking hilarious.
Multiple instances. Like the fact that it popped, the Darkseid eating a veggie tray is a scene I didn't know how much I wanted until I read it. And I was like, this is amazing. And then it coming back right at the end. You have this big, I mean, it's just so funny. The way the, like, it's such a serious and yet not serious comic at the same time, where you have all of this really terrible and incredible stuff happen. And then Metron has this big reveal at the end, and Scott can only respond by just munching on a carrot. Which, like, kind of made sense. At a certain point, we were just like, I don't even know anymore, man. I'm just going to eat this carrot.
One thing you would expect from this comic is you would expect Darkseid to go back on his word. But it's actually Scott and Barta who do it. And it was kind of gruesome to see Darkseid just rip his eye out of his eye socket.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think the thing that we knew was that Darkseid would initially agree to this, but that in the long term, this was not a good deal. And so, yeah, so you're right. I mean, we saw initially Darkseid keeping his word, which in itself was kind of weird to see, but I think there was sort of that understanding that that was not probably how it was going to go in the long term.
I agree with you there. I am very excited about how this is going to wrap up.
I like the Metron thing. When he popped up, I was like, okay, this makes sense. But, like, I also wasn't expecting it. Where's this going to go? I have no idea. I almost wonder if we're going to go back to the beginning in some way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That we're going to go back to when Scott tried to kill himself. It would not surprise me.
Wouldn't surprise me at all either. It's going to be an interesting wrap-up, that's for sure.
It also raised the question of, this whole time I've been like, well, this can't be in the main DC universe just because all of these characters have died. But it's never been explicitly an Elseworlds-esque story either. And this might be that sort of this, whatever Metron is up to might explain that a little bit.
Yeah. I've wondered the whole series if it's all in Scott's head.
Yeah. I can't wait. This has just been such an incredible book. It has absolutely lived up to what I think a lot of people expected from it as a sort of pseudo follow-up to his Vision series. It's been so good.
This is definitely worthy of me getting a hard copy of.
Yeah, I mean, I was already on that boat, but I highly recommend to people, if you have not been reading it issue by issue, when the trade for this comes out, go check it out. It is so good. It is easily one of the best comics that DC has put out in the last few years.
I agree. Totally agree with that. All right. Well, that wraps up Comics Talk for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk Batman Gotham by Gaslight.
ESO. 7 years of keeping it really geeky.
Hey! What are you trying to do? You ruined my record, man. I just bought it.
Hey, you guys!
How exciting. Spoilers.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Bye-bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Goodbye.
The Earth Station One podcast. It's time to let your inner geek out to play. You can find them at www.earthstationone.com or up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace, and we're done.
And we're back. Let's talk Batman Gotham by Gaslight. But before we start talking about that, we've got a few guests who just beamed into the Earth Station DCU suite. First up, I see a dude with a chicken. I wonder who could this be?
Hello, Drew. Hello, Cletus. This would be Kevin from the Flopcast. Good to be back.
How you doing, Kevin?
I am great, thank you.
You know, you left me hanging the other week. I'm still waiting for my chickens in the news.
Yeah, we had to push back our latest chickens in the news segment on the Flopcast. We ran out of time, so I don't know when. We'll get to it someday, one of these weeks.
Well, when I went to listen this last week, it was a filler episode. I was like,
yeah. You know, we had my wonderful co-host was not able to join me when we were planning to, and so we had a backup show on reserve. So we loaded that one up instead, but. We'll have a fresh new show for you next week.
All right. And the other person who is gracing this part of the station would be the Howdy himself.
Howdy.
How are we doing, Mr. Mike Gordon?
So, yes, when you moved up to when you actually cleared episode 100, we actually gave you a suite. So it looks like you've actually moved in quite nicely.
Why, thank you. Like what we've done with the place, huh?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, it was the least we could do. And when I say least, I mean, we really didn't do anything at all. you guys just kind of took over this part of the station, which is good. It's fair enough.
All right. Are you guys ready to talk Batman Gotham by Gaslight?
Absolutely. Oh, yes.
Let's start with you, Mike. What was your first experience with Batman Gotham by Gaslight? Either movie-wise or the trade paperback?
Yeah, I don't know if I can call it a trade because when it came out originally, it was just a one-shot. It was larger than a normal issue, but it was not, you know, it's not huge by any means. But
it's what they called the prestige format back then, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it was 1989. I don't know. I don't think I got it when it came out, but so I would probably have gotten it probably within a couple years because I really started getting back into comics around 1990-ish. It was around Nightfall, actually. Nightfall was when I got back into comics, and I was eating up everything Batman. So I got this back issue at the time, and this is outstanding. This is. A lot of people refer to the original, I guess we'll call it a graphic novel, as one of the first Elseworlds stories, really Elseworlds. I mean, I think Dark Knight certainly can qualify for that, but this one really takes the Elseworld to a new level. It's like, what would happen if Batman was around at the time of Jack the Ripper? And the premise is great. I love Victorian era. So it was right up my wheelhouse. Introduced me to a very young and awesome Mike Mignola. So young, he was called Michael on the cover. Michael Mignola. And he was just the perfect artist for this. And great art, great story. So I was a fan. And I wanted more. So as the Elseworlds, which they would label these Elseworlds, because I think Gotham by Gaslight was so popular that they decided to do more in that vein, and they needed a sort of a moniker for it or a label for it, so that they came up with Elseworlds. And I just ate all that stuff up. Anytime Elseworlds came out, whether it was Batman or whoever, I would grab all that stuff. So it was really cool and an important book, I think, in and of itself. But the story is great. It's a nice combination of the two. And so when I heard that they were animating it, I was definitely on board. It's a great, great Elseworlds to do a movie version of.
All right, Kevin, what was your first experience of Batman Gotham by Gaslight?
Well, at the risk of being kicked off this show right now and tossed out the airlock into the cold void of space, I have not read the original comic book version of Gotham by Gaslight. So my first time completely absorbing the story was this year when the animated movie version came out. I was aware of the book when it came out back in 89, but for whatever reason I never picked it up, and then the years went by, and then I somewhere it just kind of got lost in the shuffle to me when they just started cranking out all the Elseworlds just one after another, that deluge of them, because in the late 80s, obviously after Dark Knight Returns and after Batman Year One, and then that kind of opened the floodgates of all those special Batman graphic novels and prestige format comics and series and things, and I was getting a lot of them, you know, Killing Joke, and I read Batman the Cult and Batman Arkham Asylum, and so I got a bunch of them, but then at some point I thought, I cannot keep up with all these Batman books they're cranking out, and so I kind of trailed off, never read this, but I definitely want to, because especially after watching this movie, I certainly want to go back and see that original version as well.
All right, what was your first experience with it, Cletus?
So I had heard of the story before, but my first time reading it was when I was in my comic studies program over at the University of Dundee. And we were, one of the courses, I've talked about it a couple of times on the podcast, was a course on adaptation of literature into comics. And one of the ones that we read was this, which is not, it's not an adaptation of anything in particular, but it was kind of going along with some of the Victorian era books that we were reading, like Jekyll and Hyde, for example. And so we read it, and it was so good. And a combination of Superman War of the Worlds, which I've also mentioned on here before.
Yes.
Yeah, which is really, and my favorite of the Elseworlds, inspired me. The two of them combined kind of inspired me to write a paper on sort of adaptation specifically through the lens of Elseworlds and how they were taken, because there's more than you'd think. Taking these comics, taking these classic books, and adapting not only the story, but one of the things I talked about in the paper is that they adapt both the story and also the sort of the lore and mythology of the superhero character, and how it's sort of this hybrid adaptation where it's kind of adapting two different things at once. And it was just so cool. It was such an interesting thing that, I mean, the paper was, you know, okay, I'm sure, but the idea was just so interesting to me. It was really cool, and I was glad that I was able to kind of dive into that world thanks to this comic.
All right, you guys can laugh at me, because when Gotham by Gaslight came out back in 89, I looked at it, I remember seeing it, and I remember going, why do I want to read about Batman in olden times? And if I ended up buying it, because I used to buy Batman everything back then, I never read it. I wasn't, at that time, it was back, like Mike said, it was around when Nightfall was coming out and stuff like that. I wasn't interested in reading Batman in these alternate universe kind of things. I was more interested in modern Batman and what was going on in the regular storyline. So sometimes I'd pick up these extra books, but I wouldn't read them. And I don't believe I've ever read this story. Especially when I watched the movie, I was like, I don't remember reading this.
Well, that's we'll get into that, but you,
yeah, I was gonna say my reaction was I don't remember reading this either. It is quite different. I mean, the premise is kind of the same, but it's a very different experience.
Yeah,
I don't know if we won't have time to go into all the ins and outs and what's different. And I don't want to do that to people who haven't read, like you, the two of you haven't read it yet, because you should read it, and B, it don't think you like know everything about it, because it's really different.
And even, I don't know if you guys saw there was a little documentary that went along with this movie on the Blu-ray version, at least. I don't know if people watch it streaming or whatever, you might not see this, but there's a nice little documentary that comes along with Gotham by Gaslight animated. And yeah, they give a lot of information about how it was a very short story, so they needed to expand it. And I think they dipped into that sequel story that came out a year or two later to pull some material from.
Master of the Future.
Yeah, and also I believe they said they even changed the identity of who Jack the Ripper really was. It's a different killer in the comic story.
Yes, that is accurate. That was one of the things going through the story. I was... knowing, because I remembered who it was, and I was like, wow, I'm pretty sure they're not going to do him, but I kept kind of waiting. I was like, maybe they will. It really wasn't until the final reveal. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, no, that makes sense. They're going in a different direction.
In the documentary, they did not say who the killer was in the comic book, so I still do not know at this point. I know who it isn't.
I'm curious to read this graphic novel now.
You should. Yeah. You both should. It's really, and anybody out there listening should, if they haven't,
is it in print currently? Can you get, or is it part of a collection?
I think they combine, I want to say they combine this and Master of the Future into one volume, like a nice.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Cause it's so short that I figured that they probably wouldn't keep it in print in its original size. They'd want to fatten it up a little bit.
But you know how those, I can't keep track of them, but any good comic shop or Eck online, you can probably pick up the original. I mean,
yeah,
they were released, even though this was kind of a hit that I don't think anybody really saw coming, that turned into a big wave of Elseworlds. I think they still printed up a ton of them.
Yeah. So. And Mike, you have the original printing, you said, right? You have that there with you. So if I remember correctly, that's not labeled as Elseworlds, right?
No, like it's not labeled as Elseworlds. It's not even labeled as Batman. It says a tale of the Batman, but it's actually called Gotham by Gaslight. I mean, it's pretty obvious. He's on the cover. So it's not like, ooh, it's a secret. But there's no Elseworlds moniker. But this did lead right into that. So.
Yeah, this more than any other book, I think, was the template for that onslaught of Elseworlds stories that we got through the 90s.
Right, because even though Dark Knight is like a alternate future or a possible future for the Batman, it didn't try to rewrite him and put him in a different time frame.
Yeah, because the Elseworlds, most of them are like, it's like a what-if kind of a scenario.
I mean, I can remember reading some, you know, Bronze Age stories back in the day, Batman Family and all that, where Batman would encounter or meet up with or whatever they, you know, Sherlock Holmes and that kind of thing. Yeah. And I, as a fan of, like I said, Victorian era stuff, including Sherlock Holmes, I mean, that stuff, I ate that stuff up. So they had dabbled in stuff like that before, but never really to this level. So I'm surprised it took them so long. I guess they were concerned about the content because they did end up making this R, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, the movie was rated R.
So maybe they were
a little bit of language in it, and there's some blood and it's dark, and then certainly a little flash of nudity from Selena Kyle at one point. So
which is weird because the original comic is not R. Like.
So did they have the same cast of characters as in the graphic novel, or did they expand that a little bit?
They expanded a lot. Yeah, the movie really doubles down and says, okay, we're going to go all the way with this, including introducing the three Robins into it. Selina, Ivy, Harvey. No, Harvey's in the original. Sorry.
I was going to say, I thought Harvey was there.
Yeah, Bullock is not. Bullock is not in the original. Strange is not in the original. Mm. So there's a lot of Yeah, there's a lot more references in the movie to the whole Batman world than are is in. I mean, Gotham by Gaslight, it's a simple, nice, it's a simple story of really Bruce and his immediate, like, you know, Gordon's in it, and
Alfred's
in it. And is that it, Cletus? and Harvey's in it. Yeah, Harvey does make an appearance as well.
Yeah, that's all I can think of. Yeah,
yeah. I'm trying to think of any other. It's really weird because it. I think it owes a lot to, because around the same time, shortly before this book was out, was From Hell by Alan Moore.
Yeah,
and it really. There's a lot, if you've read From Hell or are familiar with the Jack the Ripper cases, there are a lot of references and Easter eggs in this to that, more than there are actually to the whole Batman universe. So,
yeah, I think I noticed in just in the documentary, they show a lot of shots from the comic book, and just the, like, one of the buildings had the name Sickert written on it, which was one of the names from the Jack the Ripper scene.
Yeah, so... So good stuff. I was wondering, you know, when I had, when I watched this movie, it had been a long enough time that I hadn't read the graphic novel, so I forgot a lot. But as I was watching it, I was like, Letus, I was like, this, I don't know, I don't think this is, no, I don't think this is what happened. And like, I just was like, did I read it? So it made me question whether or not I actually read it. So then I dug through my back issues, and there it was. So, but yeah. They're two different experiences.
I thought the thing that it did well from an adaptation standpoint is I thought it hit the same sort of mood.
Yes.
As the
and
comic.
Artwork.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I also thought that it, I have not read it recently, but if I'm remembering right, it also, the comic has a couple misdirections, right?
Yes.
See, that's what I thought it did that well, where it did it differently than the comic, but it had that same sort of misdirection, making you think one thing and getting a different kind of answer. So I liked that.
It was the, like, it was Elseworlds before Elseworlds, so they didn't really know how to really fully exploit the, like, sort of Batman universe at the time. So I think if it was written like about 5 years later, it would be a lot closer to the movie, because they probably would have brought all that stuff in, and they would have made a mini, like a whole mini series out of it, and all that kind of stuff. So it's really, you know, brief and simple. So, and I don't remember, I need to reread Master of the Future. So there might be elements of Master of the Future in this that I'm not remembering, because it's been a long time since I read that.
I watched part of the movie on my phone, and there were parts where it got really dark, at least at the beginning of the movie, where I had problems seeing what was going on. I was like, man, maybe I should watch this on a bigger screen. I was at work when I started it, so
yeah, it was certainly dark. They really captured that mood. I thought they did a beautiful job. I think I'll come right out and say it right now at this point in our conversation. I thought this was easily one of the best of all these direct-to-video DC animated movies that we've gotten.
I agree with you. I mean, it was really good. Now, I will say, like, if you're hoping for a really faithful adaptation, it's not that, as we've discussed. But that wasn't a bad thing to me at all. In fact, no. I think I kind of enjoyed being surprised by because they went in a different direction. I was able to feel the same suspense that somebody who doesn't know the story had. And I don't know. I like that.
And they went in a bold direction. I mean, you know, I mean, I know we're, I guess we're doing spoilers maybe, so.
Yes, we've already played the spoiler song, so go ahead.
the killer is very, like, jarring. Like, it's Gordon, you know, like, you know, so, and on behalf of the Gordon family, I will say that we do have, we do take issue with the fact that James Gordon is depicted as a mass murderer, but so. Yeah, we'll let the lawyers work that out. But in the meantime, I did think it was a bold move. Like it wasn't afraid to go there.
Now, was everybody surprised by that reveal? I know I was surprised by it. I wasn't expecting it to be Gordon. I thought maybe it would be somebody else. I know the movie kind of directed you towards Two-Face, and I was like, no, that's a little too easy. And I was very surprised it ended up being Gordon.
Yeah, it's a surprise. Although he was certainly on my list of possibilities, so I think they played it nicely as far as keeping you guessing, but not. It wasn't one of those. You know, sometimes it feels like a cheat when there's a reveal. Sometimes it can be done kind of clumsily. Whereas I thought this was effective, where it's a surprise, but it's also okay. I guess the pieces were there for this to be an effective reveal. But yeah, through the whole thing, is it Harvey Dent? Is it Alfred? You know, he could have been. You know, that there could have been all kinds of possibilities, and all of them would have been shocking. So I thought this was nicely done and a nice surprise.
I know I was surprised, but also I was surprised because are they going to, I don't think they're going to do the same killer at this point, but I was just so at that point, I was just curious, who are they going to pick? Yeah. And I thought they played it really well. I mean, I think it goes to show how strong of a choice it was that, I mean, like you said, Gordon was definitely a strong candidate, but at the same time, I was like, it's Jim Gordon. It can't be him.
I like the tie-in, even though that it's different, I like the tie-in to the Civil War that they make. I thought that was a really I'm a big Civil War guy too, and I just thought, like, you know, a lot of people don't really put the Victorian era and the Civil War like together because they took place on two different, you know, in two different countries, but yeah, they happen around the same time. So to have Gordon come out of the Civil War, I just thought that tie-in was really well done.
I agree.
I was impressed also just by the body count that they were willing to to kill. Obviously, it's an Elseworld. It's a self-contained universe where you can do whatever you want. You know, up to and including making Commissioner Gordon into Jack the Ripper. But that so many, you know, named familiar characters die throughout this thing. I was surprised by seeing Ivy and Leslie Tompkins and Hugo Strange. You know, that they were just knocking off characters that we know throughout the whole thing.
Yeah,
I thought making
it felt like Gotham, didn't it?
In Gotham they kill everybody, but then everybody comes back.
Well, that's true. That is true. They don't stay dead.
I thought them making Leslie Tompkins a nun, I thought that was a pretty good idea, and tying it into Bruce's origin and him staying at that orphanage.
Yeah, because obviously being an orphan is part of the Batman legend, always has been, for Bruce and for Robin. And yeah, so that plays right into this classic Victorian setting of orphanages and recasting all three Robins as a Dickensian orphans. I thought was very clever.
Todd was very much Jason Todd in this too.
These kids were right out of Oliver Twist.
Yeah, they really played around with a lot of that stuff, you know, whether it was Oliver Twist and, of course, the Jack the Ripper stuff, bringing in the Civil War, the World's Fair into it. I mean, they're tapping into a lot of stuff that's going on around that time frame. And I love the fact that they just, you know, it just feels, like organic. It doesn't feel like they're forcing anything in there.
Did we want to comment on some of the actors, some of the voice talent in this? Because these were mostly names that I didn't recognize. I recognized some of their credits when I looked them up, but it's not like a lot of jump out at you big names that they cast this with.
I will say, and I've been on record as saying that Bruce Greenwood is my second favorite Batman voice actor, period.
Like, he's really
done,
good.
He does. He's done about three of these, maybe four. Well, he plays Batman in Young Justice. And he was in one of the Batman movies. Was it the Red Hood one? I can't remember which one.
Yeah, but I think so.
But I just think he's phenomenal. And
he was very good.
I mean, obviously, you know, if you can't get Kevin Conroy, I think, I mean, to, you know, so that's a huge pillar right there. But to me, for my money, Bruce Greenwood is my second favorite.
Yeah, and that's not a name that I immediately recognize, but then yeah, I looked him up and said, oh yeah, he's done Batman a few times now, and very, very well.
He's done a lot of stuff.
And I'm curious, now, do you guys have the DVDs for this, or are you watching it on another platform, like maybe DC Universe or something else?
No, I'm a Blu-ray guy.
Yeah, I got the Blu-rays.
I was on DC Universe. I was a little bit, so one of the things that I was a little disappointed by, and was actually a little surprised by, was that DC Universe didn't have the comic to go with it. That seemed like a weird oversight to me.
Yeah, that does seem weird. They're still working out the kinks of that story.
Yeah.
Now, I have, of course, I have the DVD, because I think I mentioned it last week, didn't I, Cletus? But it's also on DC Universe, but I ended up watching my DVD of it because I have a digital copy of it and I just downloaded it onto my phone. I was surprised it was on DC Universe already, since it just came out this year.
Yeah, just, well, January, right?
Yeah.
I the only thing that bugs me, and I have, I don't buy a lot of like DVDs or Blu-rays anymore, just because, well, yeah, everything streaming and all that kind of stuff. But I do still, whenever a DC Universe movie comes out, I still do plunk down the change and get it on Blu-ray. And the thing that's annoying about that, though, is that that's the last format it comes out in. Like, so, like, everybody has seen it by the time I get my Blu-ray, because it comes out in, you know, it comes out in streaming and digital downloads and all that kind of stuff, like 2 or 3 weeks prior prior to the Blu-ray and DVD release. So, I mean, you just, everybody else is like, oh, I've seen it, that's cool. And you're like, I'm waiting.
Now, I'm curious, getting off topic a little bit, have you, Mike or Kevin, have you guys picked up the DC Universe app?
Not yet.
I'm not in any rush to, so maybe once those new series actually start surfacing, I'll break down and get it.
I think that's fair. I mean, yeah, there's some pretty good stuff on it right now, but there's definitely some things that I think need to get added and some other wrinkles to iron out still.
Yeah, when they're actually giving me new Young Justice episodes, yes, and Teen Titans and Doom Patrol and Swamp Thing and all that stuff that we hear is coming, all right, at that point you've probably got me, but not yet.
Yeah, we just announced during the news tonight that Titans is premiering on October 9th. So,
oh, wow, that's soon. I didn't realize.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
it might have me sooner than I thought. Then.
I don't know from what I've seen of Titans, I don't know that's enough for me right off the bat, but certainly Young Justice is. So the return of Young Justice will bring me there.
So I was just curious how many people have been picking it up. I've seen some online talking about DC Universe, but you know, wasn't sure about how many people were actually picking it up. Of course, both Cletus and I got it, of course. I've been on the...
Well, yeah, because you guys can write it off.
I do like DC Daily on there. I've been going on there every day and checking out DC News. Of course, I got getting some of my news off of there, so... But I have to agree with you, Cletus. I'm surprised they didn't put the actual comic book on there. Also, it only makes sense.
What is currently available? If you get this DC app thing right now, what does it get you?
So it has a large number of their animated movies. Not all of them, but like I would say 80% of their animated films are on there.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of their old TV shows and animated shows. Like all of the Timverse stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a number of the old movies. Like it's got Donner's Superman. It's got the old Batman series. It's got, I think, the first two of Nolan's. But Andrew, am I wrong? It doesn't have the last one? Or am I remembering that incorrectly?
I thought I had all three of Nolan's movies on it, but maybe
I'm
wrong.
I might be wrong on that.
I know I watched The Dark Knight on Batman Day. Super Friends is on there. The Wonder Woman series. Let's see what else. Oh, the 1990s Flash.
Yeah.
Superboy from the late 80s.
Oh, that's cool. That's the first thing you've named that I don't already own on home DVD. <So. laughs>
Batman, the animated series, the Superman animated series, Justice League Unlimited. Am I forgetting anything, Cletus?
Does it have Swamp Thing? I would be impressed if it had Swamp Thing.
I don't think so.
No. They've got a new Swamp Thing movie show that they're doing for it. So I thought maybe it would be kind of cool to revisit the original series.
They should get that one on there.
And then they've got a surprisingly large number of comics on there, but it's kind of random what they are. Very Batman heavy, which is not a surprise necessarily, especially because it came out around Batman Day. But yeah, there's a number of issues that definitely make sense from like a historical and popularity standpoint, but then there's a lot of other ones that are kind of odd.
Yeah. Are there 100 comic books there? Are there 1,000 comic books there? What kind of number would you say?
I would say over 100, wouldn't you, Andrew?
Yeah. I don't think there's 1,000 on there, but they keep adding stuff all the time.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's going to be a while before they build up their library.
Sure. They also have what's really nice is a sort of this encyclopedia thing that you can go to. Which I mean, obviously Wikipedia exists. The one thing that we talked about, our previous podcast, we kind of summarized the different things that you can get and talked about them, is that in the encyclopedia thing, they list certain issues and movies and things that they appear in, but they don't link to them, even though they have them on the site. So we're hoping that they add that link there.
Yeah.
Cause like they'll reference, like, I don't know, Booster Gold might appear in Brave and the Bold, episode 14. And they have the Brave and the Bold series, but they don't link to it, which is kind of odd.
Yeah. And they'll mention it there, but they don't have a link to it, so you can just click on it and go to it. It's weird.
Well, as you said, it's still new, so not even a month old. Still got that new streaming service smell.
Yeah.
But I will say the number of comics is bigger than you might expect. I was curious if it was going to be kind of a more of a side thing where they had like just a handful of issues. It's more robust than I was expecting it to be to start out with.
Yeah, which makes sense. I would think that it has to be, like, if they really want to sell this thing and they're competing with however many other streaming services are out there, and most of us can only subscribe to so many of these things. So that's an advantage if you're DC Comics and you're sitting on a library of 80 years of comic books. You have a lot of content there that you can beef up the value of your service with.
And I know that or at least the way I understand it is, the Batman the Animated Series run that they have is the new restored digital version, like the one that's coming out on Blu-ray. So it's not like the one I have on DVD. So so part of me is like, oh, but it would be an upgrade.
All right. Well, let's get back to Gotham by Gaslight here.
And, we were talking about the cast, and apart from Bruce Greenwood, there's a few other voices I recognize. Most notably, Anthony Head, who plays Watcher Supreme on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Giles, and most known for that and his coffee commercials. So he was a great choice. I enjoyed hearing his voice. I thought that was a good pick. I'm not familiar with Jennifer Carpenter much.
Yeah, that's a name I didn't know either. I think I looked her up. I think she was best known from Dexter.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, okay.
Which I never saw.
But she seemed fine though.
She was very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gray Griffin, I'm always a fan of. She's done so much voice work. She was Leslie, sister Leslie Tompkins.
Gotcha.
But she's Daphne on most of the Scooby-Doo shows of the last several years. And she's done everything. She actually works with friends of mine. She's one of the stars of Mighty Magiswords on Cartoon Network, which good friends of the Flopcast created. So I know people that work with Gray quite a bit.
Very nice.
Yeah. Tara Strong also is a name that very well known in
Tara Strong and Joe DiMaggio. I'm like, I don't think you can make an animated movie without
<That's right>.
their voices in some form, you know.
Yeah, John DiMaggio, who was Bender, right, from Futurama.
Yep.
Yeah.
Among many other things, but yeah.
And Aquaman from Batman Brave and the Bold.
That's right.
Which was fantastic. Yeah, so again, it's not a lot of names that are instantly recognizable, but very well cast, I thought. One of the first ones post Andrea Romano, right? I didn't see Andrea's name in this, so I think this is one of the ones that she was stepping down.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen her name in a while. So, yeah, I think she's been... You're right. I think
she's she has officially retired now, yeah, I believe. Yeah. But it was a question of, you know, I don't know how much was in the pipeline that still had her fingerprints on it. But obviously she got the ball rolling, and they're still doing a beautiful job casting these things.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, any last thoughts on the movie?
I thought it was excellent. It makes me want to go back and make up for missing the comic book the first time almost 30 years ago. So I definitely want to read the original version. And yeah, I think this was a very strong movie and stands up among, as I said, among the best of all these DC animated movies have been very strong overall. I've really enjoyed almost all of them. But this one I'd put way up near the top.
Yeah, I agree. I would put this one at the top, even though it's not, a very authentic recreation of the comic. I actually think that's a plus.
It's fine. Yeah.
Because they can do their own thing. But the spirit is there. The elements that I love about the Victorian era and that time period are there. You guys mentioned how it was dark, and yeah, maybe they might have taken that a little too much. Look, it's cool seeing Batman. I mean, he just kind of works in a gothic environment. I mean, I know it's Gotham and gothic and all that kind of stuff, but I mean, it really artistically and aesthetically, he just fits in this time frame. And I think it's a great way to. The fact that they do bring in, you know, the orphans, and they do bring in other characters, and Selina is great in this. I think I mentioned this last time I was on when we talked about the wedding, that I'm a big Bruce and Selina fan. I love watching the two of them and their dynamics, no matter how what the story is, whether they're against each other or working together or some mixture in between. So I like the dynamic that they had here. I think this is definitely one of the better ones. If they wanted to, you know, do another one, I would be all in.
I really enjoyed it. I mean, I have a lot to add to what you guys have said. I mean, you summarized basically my thoughts as well. It's excellent. I think this was the first one of their R rated that I thought earned that rating, or it didn't feel like it was being R for the sake of being R. It felt like it made sense to the story. Especially with Jack's character. I mean, he was just, I don't know, his dialogue is hard to listen to, but also, like, I thought appropriate to how just distorted his character's mind is. I just really enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it also, and it got me kind of excited. I want to read the graphic novel now, so I want to see what the differences are, and once I read the graphic novel, I'll decide which version do I like the best.
You can, it's okay to like them both equally.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have a shout out, Kevin?
Well, I would just say, if you want to hear a very, very silly, goofy, ridiculous show here on the ESO Network, that's what I'm here for. Tune into the Flopcast. We do a very silly show every single week, often involving chickens. And we do talk some comic books, and I'm an old school DC Comics fan, so I like to get in some DC Comics talk even on our silly little show when I can as well. So find us on the ESO Network, find us at flopcast.net every single week.
You know, you'll find me there.
Thank you.
All right, Mike?
Well, I appreciate the invite as always. It's nice to come to this side of the station. Love what you guys are doing. Wish I could join you more, but yeah, like I said, I'm not as current on other DC type books as this. So when you bring out a one shot, then I'm your guy. But yeah, if you want, you can find me on the regular Earth Station 1 weekly podcast. We are getting ready to usher in our October episodes, which of course means the countdown to Halloween. So if you like gothic stuff, If you like spooky stuff, if you like dark stuff, that's all what we're all about in October. So starting with next week, our next episode is celebrating the 50th anniversary of Night of the Living Dead, the original George Romero classic. We've got other cool stuff happening as well. So you can check out our show throughout the month of October.
All right, Cletus, what's your shout out for this week?
So I've got two. The obvious one, of course, is for my comics recommendation is Gotham by Gaslight. I highly recommend you check it out. If you have seen the movie and you want to check out the comic, it's great because you're going to get a different story. So you don't know what the story is going to give you. So that's, I think, a positive with it. It's also really good. And if you will enjoy that sort of Victorian era Batman, another one, I don't know that it's quite as good as Gotham by Gaslight, but I still quite enjoyed it. Was Batman Two Faces, which is a loose adaptation of Jekyll and Hyde using the Batman mythos, and is also pretty good and does some kind of interesting things with Jekyll and Hyde and that.
All right, and for my shout out, I'm going way away from comics here. I've been reading a book called Scythe, which Cletus recommended to me and some other my coworkers at the bookstore. It is really good. It's about Earth in the future. An AI has basically taken over, and everybody's got nanites in their bodies that repair them, so there's no death. And to keep from overpopulation, they have these group of scythes that go around and glean people to lower the population. Very good book. I'm loving it. I'm actually on the sequel to it, Thunderhead, right now, and I've just been really enjoying it.
Cool.
All right. Well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line at 317-564-9133, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Coming up next week, we will be talking Heroes in Crisis number 1, Doomsday Clock number 7, Action Comics number 1003, Batgirl number 27, Justice League Dark number 3, Justice League Odyssey number 1, and The Terrifics number 8. And we're about 2 weeks away from the Return of the Arrowverse shows, which I'm very excited about. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.